Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, January 18th, 2022. Hello, Dave.
Hey, it's another Tuesday, Melody.
It is. It's amazing how many Tuesdays there are in a year.
I know. How about it? 7 times 52. Or, excuse me, I guess 52. Never mind. That's days all total.
We'll move right along after that one.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, you know, happy National Thesaurus Day.
Oh.
Yeah. In 1840, Peter Roget retired from his successful career in medicine and spent the rest of his life working on his Thesaurus of English Words and Phrases, which was published in 1852. Mm. So there you have today's daily wisdom.
Well, thank you for bringing that to us.
How about that?
Yes. All right. Well, I'm going to bring to the listeners the market report. We have gold today. Pressure on gold because the 10-year the yields increased today, I do believe. So there was pressure on gold, down 570 at 1,814. Silver, though, was up 48 cents at $23.56. Platinum was up 9 at 991. Palladium was up 31 at 1,994. The USDX today was up 0.53 at 95.77. And you have crude oil up almost another $2 at 85.80. Paper markets today took a little bit of a beating. You have the Dow down 543 points. That's 1.5%, 35,368. The S&P was down 1.8%. 4,577. The NASDAQ was down almost 2.75%, almost 3%, 14,506. So some big drops. Jerome Powell got most of the blame, saying people, Wall Street, being concerned about rising interest rates. Europe, or Asia, I should say, was mixed. Europe was all negative. Again, most of them, the biggest one down was the DAX. That was just down a little over 1%. Let's see what that 10-year yield did. Wow. Holy smokes. 1.879%. 1.87%. So that's quite a jump, Dave.
Yes.
And I always say if that keeps popping like that, they don't have to raise rates. But, you know, it's funny listening to all of these so-called mainstream analysts, these financial planners and so forth. Basically what they're saying, the Fed is between a rock and a hard place. You know, because usually when you raise rates, it's to calm the economy down when it's too hot, so to speak. And now they have to raise rates because inflation, and it could do a double whammy. So they really are between a rock and a hard place. But if that was their only concern, that probably wouldn't be that much of a big deal. But I think they've got a whole lot more on their shoulders than, you know, trying to juggle the books. But they are between a rock and a hard place. They've been there for a long time, and they've been lucky. And that's all it comes down to. They've been lucky. They had the power to go forward in creating various programs to keep Wall Street happy, to keep the economy going. And so
it's a beautiful thing to have control of the printing presses.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if they wanted to fix the economy, all they'd have to do is, instead of sending out COVID testing packages, send each and every one of us our own printing press and let us print our own. So how about that? When we wouldn't have to worry about inflation, we could print whatever we needed to buy whatever price anything was, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So forget those COVID tests. Give us our own personal printing machines. And with that, you know, with all the talk of inflation, home builders, they're facing another round of increased costs. And that means, how are people going to afford these new homes? Builder confidence, because of that, fell 1 point to 83 in January. This is all according to the National Association of Home Builders. We know anything above 50 is positive. Higher material costs and lack of availability are adding weeks to typical single-family construction homes. The aggregate cost of residential construction material has increased almost 19% since December of 2020. The price of softwood lumber alone, like pine, has jumped about 85%, and that's just in the last 3 months. We remember when lumber prices went up, they went down, and now prices spiked last spring, but they're going up again after they dropped, now going back up again. After the U.S. double tariffs on Canadian lumber and Western wildfires disrupted lumber production. And a lot of that Canadian lumber, yes, that's what builds homes. So where's it going to end, Dave?
Oh, I don't know.
I do.
Tell us.
And it's not going to end in a pleasant place.
Well, you know, other related materials like gypsum and steel, they're also higher than they have been. And, of course, the ongoing labor shortage has pushed up costs in the industry as well. Sales expectations in the next 6 months fell a little bit, but it's still relatively high at 83, although buyer traffic also fell. A couple of points to 69. Now, as you alluded to, builders are also facing much higher mortgage rates this year. The average rate in the 30-year fixed is now about 0.5% higher than it was just a month ago and 0.75% higher than it was a year ago. You have the NAHB chief economist Bob Dietz saying that the combination of these increases points to declines for housing affordability for 2022.
Well, you know, I was looking up one of our listeners, Rob. He was called in a month or so ago, about a month ago. We were talking about higher oil prices. And he certainly is spot on. And, you know, a lot of these oil prices, higher oil prices, of course, are concerns about the escalating Middle East. But Exxon CEO Darren Woods, he's sure they're going to trend lower. In the immediate future, the oil executive said the market should expect volatile prices as the industry recovers from the ongoing pandemic. Until industry begins to ramp up productions and increase the level of supply to meet this growing demand, or in turn demand starts to come down a little bit, you're going to see a lot more volatility until we get better stability. Well, Dave, I mean, you know, we're not going to ramp up productions because things were being shut down. So if you're looking for less demand, that means the economy is dropping. So either scenario, that means there's no fix. And the one that will happen is he's right, the demand will stop. The demand will start to come down, but not a little bit. And, you know, that's the sad thing. West Texas crude, the U.S. oil benchmark, traded as high as $85.74 per barrel this morning. We haven't seen that price since October of 2014. And the international benchmark, the Brent crude, broke above $88 per barrel. And again, we haven't seen that since 2014. And we all know it's going to go to 100. Dave?
Yeah, I'm not sure I have much to add to that. Just that, you know, it's a double-edged sword for sure. Certainly, rapidly increasing oil prices over the last several months have put a dent into households' pocketbooks, combined with particularly the increase in goods at the grocery store are making shopping and filling up your tank quite the ordeal this year. So I don't know where it ends or when. Again, there seems to be growing consensus that you know, unless the increased prices starts to put a dent into demand, which is possible, particularly as we get into, you know, the spring thaw and the warmer weather, the travel, you know, travel time by vehicle. You know, this road towards $100 a barrel just does seem inevitable, doesn't it?
Certainly does. You get the paper traders in there and everything else too, and yep, zip, there it goes. So $100 is a pretty good bet at this point in time.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of interesting, and it disturbs me on a level that, again, this was something that has been discussed many months ago. Nobody did anything about it. Now they're down to the wire, and I don't know, people's lives in danger. Airlines are warning of 5G's disrupting the flights. And they're raising the stakes and towards AT&T and Verizon. They're trying to launch a new 5G wireless service this week. They're warning, and this is the airline industry, is warning that thousands of flights could be grounded or delayed if the rollout takes place near major airports. They're talking the ones like Chicago, Seattle. CEOs of the nation's largest airlines said that the interference from the wireless service on a key instrument on planes is worse than they originally thought. To be blunt, the nation's commerce will grind to a halt unless the service is blocked near major airports. Well, this was in a letter sent yesterday to the federal officials. And, you know, it's kind of, well, they waited until yesterday knowing that they're going to start it tomorrow. You know, what have you been doing, you know, beforehand? AT&T and Verizon plan to activate the 5G. There were delays previously. Now, the new high-speed 5G service uses a segment of the radio spectrum that is close to that used by altimeters, which are devices that measure the height of aircraft above the ground. So that's a pretty important gauge that you'd want to have, Dave, right? That's an important instrument to have working for you.
Would not want to be flying blindly with 250 passengers aboard and pounding rain and 25-mile-an-hour winds with low cloud cover. doesn't make for a pleasant entry to either your destination or getting ready to go home.
And the sad thing about it is if they don't do anything by the time they flip the switch tomorrow, how many people are going to be flying that are unaware of the danger?
Well, you know, you raise a very good point, because there'll be, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not more, and it begs the question, should the airlines be required, you know, as part of the safety protocols, you know, and they're telling you how to put on your seatbelt and, you know, the oxygen mask should a crisis occur, if they should hand out, you know, flyers or, you know, have something in the pockets behind each of the seats or in front of the seats, I guess, to you know, let people, I mean, just to promote awareness and you know, I guess.
Yeah, but then it's a little too late. You can't get off the plane.
Well, if you do it as the plane is rising, maybe that needs to occur at the ticketing window or in the waiting area. I don't know how that happens. Now there should be something, when you book a flight, then you know far enough in advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really do need to, you know, do something, but it's always sad. You know, they waited till the last minute just to put pressure on everything, and, you know, then there isn't anything that can stop that train. But, I mean, we'll see. But yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see what happens, Dave. What else would you like to add to that?
Well, not a whole lot. I mean, just that, you know, it's a game of billions.
Yeah.
We know that AT&T and Verizon spent several billion dollars. I forget the number. I don't know if it was 6.5 I read somewhere for the C-band spectrum that you mentioned. That was in a government auction that was overseen by the FCC. Then, of course, it spent billions more to to build out these networks, you know, across the country. So, the fact that they're claiming that the telecommunication companies didn't adequately address airline concerns about placing these networks too close to airports, for now it seems to have fallen on deaf ears who, you know, the AT&T and Verizon say, you know, there's nothing to worry about.
That kind of reminds me of Boeing Supermax. Oh, you have nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Two flights went down and hundreds of people died.
Yeah.
And they knew. And that's the sad thing about it. But you can't interrupt commerce. Heavens no. Can't do that.
Just ask Big Pharma about that.
Yes, really. Really. Manufacturing activity, a little change in New York State, according to the New York Fed's January survey. After straight 18 months of positive readings, the general business conditions fell a steep 33 points. 22% of respondents reporting that conditions have improved over the month. 23% reported that conditions had worsened. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter produced by Dave Allen, and, of course, a little blog at the end of the week, too. So we send you information, but we don't overload you with information. If you need information about gold and silver, give me a call at 1-800-375-4188. It's 1-800-375-4188. You know, here goes another $50 billion to... I know you and I are going to disagree on this, Dave, but maybe not. $50 billion to fight wildfires. Plan calls for more aggressively thinning forests around so-called hot spots where nature and these neighborhoods kind of collide anymore. Administration officials said that they have crafted a $50 billion plan to more than double the use of controlled fires and logging to reduce trees and other vegetation that serves as tinder in the most at-risk areas. They said work will begin this year and plan will focus on regions where out-of-control blazes have wiped out neighborhoods. Now, I do believe in controlled fires. But I don't know how this $50 billion is going to fight all the environmentalists who, in these states, who have said you can't do it. And that's the problem. That's one of the problems. I'm sure there's more to it, and logging. What they have done to loggers to prevent them from logging is my understanding. I might be wrong. So I don't know how they're going to reverse that. Some of these areas have included the California Sierra Nevada Mountains, the east side of the Rockies and Colorado and parts of Arizona, Oregon, and, Washington State. So,
there are a lot of issues here. Besides the money, I mean, the fact that thousands of homes are still being built in these high risk areas is a big part of the problem. That's almost always a local concern, i.e., you know, zoning. But yet, you know, it suggests there's a demand for that. I mean, who doesn't want, you know, a really beautiful wooded lot in a mountainous area that's, you know, far enough away from downtown, wherever, but still close enough to, you know, the amenities they provide.
But Dave, a lot of those people who buy those properties and so forth, I mean, did you ever go through some of these mountains and you see private property signs for, you know, these are the, you know, billionaires who buy thousands and thousands and thousands of acres?
Well, that's another story.
And so are we going to clear up their properties for them?
No. And that's part of the problem. I mean, one of the things we don't know by this particular story is what is the private sector, what are individual homeowners and homeowner associations, what are public utilities. California's a big one that was deemed responsible for at least two of the huge fires over the last couple of years, and And insurance companies, what do they bring into the table? I mean, of course, besides paying to have some of these, or if not a lot of them, these homes rebuilt. So it's something I'd like to know. I mean, obviously, this is over a 5 or 10 year time horizon, but it, you know, even it's, you know, 50 billion divided by 10 is five bill a year. That's a lot. Now they talk about the full scope of work here envisioned is 80,000 square miles, an area almost as large as Idaho. So there certainly should be a significant, even a, perhaps a 50-50 share of the cost of a lot of this work. Now, you know, on federal lands, it's certainly another story that is and ought to be the responsibility of our government. And I just don't know. I mean, there certainly ought to be, I mean, I presume somewhere are cost-benefit analyses, like what happens if we don't do this. But I hope there's something that shows, well, what are the results from this if we do go down this road
this
money?
They put in 50, they put in this amount of money. But what? How is that any different than people who live on the coast or in rivers? And so, it's a person's responsibility to take care of what he owns. And if something happens, it's,
you mean like
life.
Coastal flooding, for example.
Or any type of flooding, you know,
yeah,
with your lakes, your streams.
Whatever.
You know, what about these dams that break due to lack of attention from the local authorities, the counties, the states, or whatever? You know, the infrastructure, whoever controls the dams and so forth. And you can, no matter how you thin things out, I mean, if you have droughts and so forth. So, I mean, I don't think you can control. I don't think you can do enough controlled burning to keep that amount of land so you don't have these issues. I mean, has anybody in D.C. actually seen how big it is out there? And so I don't know. I mean, so most of that money will funnel into California. Most of that money will funnel into maybe Washington State and perhaps some into Oregon. And I don't know. Let them take care of their own. Let the states take care of their own problems to some degree. But anyway.
There we go. We didn't disagree a whole lot on that.
No, we didn't. No.
Not fundamentally anyway, but.
You know, so, and you know, it is a situation, but $50 million is going to be blown. That's my point, too. Because there will be no accountability for it. It'll go into the coffers and the government officials of California, mainly, to all the wealth in there that, you know, all these high-value dollar homes that were burned down. To tidy it up, make sure it doesn't happen again, and they don't have to pay a dime. And that's, you know, it's kind of like even the floods on the East Coast that when they go into these very wealthy areas, those areas get all the attention first. Anyway, Ukraine. We have a Secretary of State going to visit Ukraine this week to meet with the president. And they're trying to deter Russia from invading the neighbor. He's going to land there tomorrow. And he's also going to meet with the employees and families of the U.S. Embassy compound there to communicate the contingency plans should Russia choose to escalate further. I'm glad you brought this up today, Dave, because, you know, Pat Buchanan had a really good article on this. And basically, he says, you know, the U.S. would take no military action in support of Ukraine because Ukraine is not a member of NATO. And he talks about that this is the real world. And as Ukraine is not a NATO ally, one that they're not going to invite in, he says, if it was declared so publicly, that would pretty much remove Putin's pretext for any invasion. And Biden has already declared that we would not put offensive weapons in Ukraine. And so my question is, if that's really the case, then I wonder why that isn't done, if it's as simple as that.
Well, it's a good question, and I've thought of that too recently, and I suppose the answer to that, whether or not it's a good one, is that, you know, these elected, well, they technically, Putin's elected, but the heads of state, particularly of the larger nations, but virtually all heads of state are sensitive about how they're perceived, particularly their leadership capabilities. And if they're seen as backing down, for example, to another major power, then, you know, they're viewed, whether it's the opposition party in that country or other leaders around the world, they're seen as perhaps weak or acquiescing. Appeasing, whatever word you want to use, and I'm sure that is a big, particularly as polarized and split as the U.S. is right now politically and has been. I suspect that's a good chunk of that. It does really bug me that even if there's, you know, some even in the mind, if it's a majority of the NATO membership who see in the back of their mind, well, maybe, you know, 10, 15 years down the road, or in an ideal world, maybe even next year, who knows, that NATO could someday become a member of the organization. Mm-hmm. But they've got to know in the reality of things, that, as you said, or as Buchanan wrote, it's not going to happen anytime soon. If there's an intention for that to happen at all. And, you know, if that's the one thing or the major thing, it's not the only thing. I mean, you know, Putin's talked about removing some nukes, tactical nukes from Poland and a few other areas in Eastern Europe. Our nukes, not his, but mainly, you know, take NATO off the table. And then you almost think for sure that lessens, you got to believe that there can be somewhat part of a deal. But he's also, Putin also, even though he's not ever going to admit it publicly, that these sanctions are hurting his buddies, his oligarchs in Russia and in some of the neighboring states where they park their money. So I'm sure that's on their minds too. But I agree in this case, and I rarely agree with Pat Buchanan, that it seems like an easy, and it's not a gesture. I mean, I think it's, you know, you can, I don't know how you word it. That will never. I mean, I don't think you want to necessarily say that, because that could send, you know, Ukraine right into the arms of Russia, that they can never be members. But you think that there's some way to couch all this stuff that, you know, makes it, you know, at least a solution or part of a solution in the short term.
And, you know, if Biden would come out and say, I mean, you know, it would basically put us in the driver's seat instead of being controlled by Russia. I mean, we'd be able to begin to control things instead of doing what he wants us to do. But anyway.
Yeah. And he, you think about it, Putin, Russia's in awful shape economically. You know, I think about, you know,
everybody is.
Well, it's true. But the posturing of, you know, with the new generation of nuclear weapons, of intercontinental ballistic hypersonic missiles, and It's like, no one can afford that. What's the price you're paying to, are we going to enter another?
I don't think the price matters to them anymore. It doesn't matter. I mean, why should it matter?
Well, it certainly didn't matter when there was more money around and less debt. But 30, 40, 50 years later, there's less. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, the money supply has actually gone up, but there sure is a heck of a lot more debt in this country. And, Russia just has a lot less to go around. And it just boggles the mind that this is where we still are in this day and age.
Yeah. Well, we talk about, the supply shelves and how the product gets here and so forth. First, it was the sticker shock and the tests of pain tolerance heading into the 3 year of this pandemic. Companies are continuing to pay soaring rates for ocean freight. Cargo transport costs still remain elevated on both the spot market and, more recently, the longer-term contracts. The shippers are signaling with the container lines. No surprise, 2021 was the container shipping industry's most profitable year, and 2022 is kind of off to the same kind of trend. Can't empty the containers. But, hey, it's the most profitable years. And these container rates are basically largely a result of supply and demand. There are a finite number of containers and ships clashing with stronger than normal demand for these finished products, intermediate goods, and raw materials. Add congested ports and unpredictable outbreaks of sickness and the capacity to move the world's goods. Prices keep rising, Dave.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, these containers, which once cost $1,000 to $2,000 per, now cost $10,000, $12,000 plus.
Oh my!
Plus exorbitant storage rates. If they get to their final destination, and that's not in the port waters, but it sounds like the EU and the US are in particular, keeping an eye on three alliances that nine of the biggest shipping companies are divided into. And these are commercial agreements that enable the competitors to share vessel space to reduce overlap on trade routes. Hmm. It's still ugly out there, ladies and gentlemen, and we're seeing it because we're paying the end result.
Yeah, a little improvement. But what we do have is our second break of the program. Stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody in the office taking care of clients. This third segment, you can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, just quickly here, no surprise, this next story. Trust in governments around the world is collapsing, especially in democracies. That's according to the Edelman Group's 2022 Global Trust Barometer survey, which we talk about every year, 35,000 respondents in 28 companies, mostly respondents being government leaders, journalists, but also business people as well. People don't think government, business, or the media are telling them the truth. The suspicion of societal institutions is pushing people into smaller, more insular circles of trust, so says Edelman. Now, 67% believe journalists, 66% believe government leaders, 63% believe business executives are purposely trying to mislead people by saying things they know are false or gross exaggerations. Around the world, people fear the media is becoming more sensational for commercial gain and that government leaders continue to exploit divisions for their own personal interests. That certainly isn't or shouldn't come as too big a surprise. It's just as these numbers get higher each year, you just wonder how can we or can we even get back, or how do we turn that around? This is somewhat disconcerting. Billionaire investor Chamath Palihapitiya triggered a backlash on social media recently after saying on an episode of his podcast that nobody cares about the ongoing human rights abuses against the Uyghurs in China. During a 90-minute podcast, Palihapitiya told host Jason Calacanis on their All In program that he'd be lying if he said he cared about the Uyghurs. Of course, they're an ethnic Muslim minority in China's northwest region of Xinjiang. He said, "It's not a priority for me." Now, he also happens to be a venture capitalist, again, a billionaire, who happens to own 10% of the professional basketball team Golden State Warriors. Now, the Warriors wrote after this podcast that Palihapitiya does not speak on behalf of our franchise, and his views certainly don't reflect those of our organization. I just found that that to be interesting, that someone with, even though he may not, his name may not be well known, he still has a high profile in the financial sector. Now, last month, the White House announced a diplomatic boycott of the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing, which began, I believe, February 3rd, citing ongoing genocide and crimes against humanity in Xinjiang and other human rights abuses. Government, civil society groups, and UN officials have previously expressed concern over Beijing's harsh measures of repressing those who criticize the Chinese Communist Party. All right, back to the U.S. of A. Joe Biden's long-awaited nominations for at least three vacant seats in the Federal Reserve Board of Governors have been released. Now the big question is how Sarah Bloom Raskin, Lisa Cook, and Philip Jefferson, if confirmed, might shift policy. The answer? Don't expect any big changes to the Fed's policy direction, particularly overnight. Perhaps do expect it to prioritize a healthy labor market more in the coming years. Now, the Fed's actions do shape the economy, or at least they try to, in ways that outlast the presidents who appoint them. And the Biden-appointed Fed looks to be a more explicitly pro-worker central bank than we've seen here in modern times. With inflation running at 40-year highs, the Fed's in the midst of a pivot to more hawkish monetary policy. 90% of Fed watchers now believe their first of three rate hikes this year will be announced at the end of their March meeting. Raskin, Cook, and Jefferson are unlikely to stand in the way of that pivot, and not just because the slow-moving Senate confirmation process means it will likely be well underway before they're confirmed for their new jobs. The Fed's a consensus-driven institution, and the consensus have swung decisively in a hawkish direction over the last 3 months. Even normally dovish officials like San Francisco Fed Pres Mary Daly and Chicago Fed Pres Charles Evans on board with the policy shift. But over time, these new additions to the Board of Governors, all of whom have a permanent vote on monetary policy, unlike, say, the regional Fed presidents who rotate, they're all at and participate in Federal Open Market Committee meetings, but those who have votes rotate on a yearly basis. These new additions, the Board of Governors have emphasized the importance of running a hot labor market to achieve gains for workers and, they say, greater racial equality. Now, that implies these three new governors would resist continuing to push interest rates higher once inflation moderates. But that's a presumption that, although a number see inflation beginning to come down sometime this year, just as they saw inflation as being transitory last fall, well, as recently as late fall. Who knows when that's actually going to happen? One Fed watcher says inflation is so high and political pressures on the Fed are so strong, including from Democrats, that we doubt they'll push hard against the will of the committee. But other analysts add, because of all of them have expressed views in favor of broader expansion of the labor market, we expect them to resist substantial tightening in the future. Now, regulatory policy, that's a different matter. If confirmed as vice chair for supervision, and Republican senators will try to stop that from happening, most likely, Raskin would have more explicit power over a more wide range of regulatory policy and look to rein in the deregulatory impulses of her predecessor, Randall Quarles. We will see. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters at dgscoins.com. The nation's worker shortage has become a flywheel of doom, messing up our lives and society writ large. It's according to Axios's Emily Peck, and many of the underlying problems, she adds, that led to this breakdown are bigger than the pandemic. Because of increased restrictions on immigration, it's true, and travel that began with the pandemic in early 2020, the net inflow of immigrants into the U.S. has, for all intents and purposes, been in a two-year hiatus. By the end of last year, about 2 million fewer working-age immigrants were living here than would have been if pre-2020 patterns had continued unchanged. Now, that's according – don't kill the messenger here, please – that's according to a new study – by Giovanni Perry and Reem Zayor at the University of California, Davis. Professors estimate that about one half or 1 million of these potential workers would have been college educated. More on the significance of that a little bit later. Now, data on labor shortages across industries suggests that this dramatic drop in foreign labor supply is also a likely contributor to the current labor shortages. These shortages have led to problems like supply chain disruptions, school closures, poor service from the hospitality industry, and, yes, surging child care costs. CEOs say labor shortages are the top threat to their businesses this year. That's in the latest survey from the Conference Board. Some say the labor problems broadly are about COVID, but the root causes pre-exist the pandemic. Two of them mainly, lost immigrants, about 2 million fewer working-age immigrants in the U.S. because of pandemic restrictions, according to Perry and Zayor's calculations, and two, the Great Retirement. Increased retirement and workers' bargaining power are also playing an important role. There are 3.3 million more retirees of October 21 than January 2020. That number far exceeds pre-pandemic demographic expectations. More generous unemployment and other stimulus benefits rolled out during the crisis may have discouraged workers from taking especially low-paying jobs in 2020 and early 2021, but they don't seem to be the cause of the current shortages because most of those enhancements expired last September. Recent anecdotal and other evidence finds a push by workers for more job flexibility, safety, and yes, pay. That's caused resignations and contributed to unfilled job openings to the tune of 4.5 million. End of 2021. Now, a recent study by the Kansas City Fed found that an excess of retirements and reduced reentry of retirees to the labor force has increased the share of retirees by 1.3 percentage points in the last 2 years. That compares to an annual rate of increase of just 0.3 percentage points, or more than three quarters less than prior to the pandemic. These factors have affected labor availability, especially in low-paying manual-intensive jobs in sectors like food services and hospitality. The rates of unfilled job in those two sectors alone are well above what's predicted by, well, the correlation between the rate of unfilled jobs and an industry's dependence on foreign workers, suggesting that other factors are at work in those sectors as well. But look, the loss of 2 million potential immigrants, of which a million are college educated, could certainly impact productivity and employment here in the long run. A study by, and this is a separate study by Perry and others at the University of Chicago, shows that college educated immigrants are likely to work in the so-called STEM sectors, science, technology, engineering, and math. Additional research focused on the STEM jobs shows that they're responsible for creating up to 2.5 additional jobs for each additional employed high-skilled worker. That multiplier effect is significant. Thus, with the loss of 1 million college education immigrants, that would leave the economy with lower productivity, which translates to lower growth. In fact, the loss of college education immigrants implies 2.5 million fewer jobs in local economies where immigrants would have worked. So economists are hopeful that when it becomes safer to return to work, more Americans will in fact go back to work. Labor economist Aaron Sojourner at the University of Minnesota believes that if people are healthy and risks are low, they'll be more willing to get back to work. It's a win-win, he says. But unless there's a new policy intervention by the president and Congress, there's still going to be a shortage of immigrant workers, which is going to hold back other parts of the economy. We have lost 2 years of immigration, and there's nothing in our system that allows us to catch up, Perry says. Immigrant workers could help alleviate shortages in a range of industries, including child care. And, of course, child care workers have a downstream effect on the 1.5 million working mothers and older women who've stepped out of the workforce over the course of the pandemic to help with their grandchildren's care. So Perry and Zaire conclude that the shortfall of immigrants over the past 2 years harms the outlook for our economy. Further, they believe reduced numbers of foreign students and high-skilled immigrants are particularly concerning for the long-run effects on productivity, innovation, and entrepreneurship in the U.S. In light of this, they say the federal government should, this year, increase the number of non-immigrant and immigrant visas to avoid further shrinking the number of immigrants. This doesn't mean opening the floodgates of our country, particularly in the time of pandemic, but it does mean that work visas, they're suggesting, should be increased, particularly with these incredible amounts of millions of unfilled jobs. So listen, please send your comments to me at daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. We'll discuss them on a future Financial Survival Radio program. That's daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Melody will return tomorrow with Butch, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our great producer, Todd, and to our loyal listeners, you, for tuning into Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye. I have a plan. If I got you.